Welcome to Dreadful Digest, where we look at your favorite horror novels and rip apart their adaptations. I'm your host, Tessa Nelson, and I have two special guests today, my friends, Callie and Derek. Thank Hello. You for joining me.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yes, yeah. Of course. This was a very special episode. This is a very different episode.
Yeah.
Derek's idea. You want to explain how you came up with this idea?
You know, as a devoted fan of the podcast, yet a self-proclaimed hater of horror, I was struggling to find a way to get myself on the podcast, so I thought I'm not too familiar with a lot of horror franchises, stuff like that, so I struggled to find a movie that had a book adaptation that I had heard of,
that you care about too,
that I cared about, that was also not covered already.
Mm-hmm.
And in my search I found the movie, Cabin in the Woods, which I had seen a long time ago, and it turns out there was not a novel that it's based on, but there is a novel that the writer of the novel sued the movie.
Yes, yep. That's the bulk of what we're going to be covering, is if this lawsuit, you know, is viable. I guess we're gonna be the judges here, even though we have no experience in that whatsoever. But that's what we're gonna try. That's the idea of the episode. But yeah, how did you hear about this case?
I heard about it just because I was scrolling through like Google to find horror movies that were based on books. I saw Cabin in the Woods. I remember thinking it was fun when I watched it the first time,
mm-hmm.
and then while I was looking up the movie, I noticed there was just an article about it being sued.
So okay, interesting. Well, before we get into all that, would you guys like to share your experience within film, entertainment, whatever you feel like sharing?
Well, my experience, it's like, it's film TV adjacent, yeah. I want to say. It's more on the business side. I'm a sales associate for Paramount for their local ad sales department, and I basically help them book commercials to put on the air. It's a lot of like order entry, working on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
I just get an assignment, put it in their database, and that's my job for the most part.
Sweet. So yeah. Do you consider yourself a fan of horror at all?
Nope.
No? Okay. So neither of you like it. That's cool. Are you are you super against it, or are you just like, I don't want to dive into this?
It's not a genre that I like go out of my way to like watch. I don't typically go out of my way to watch any like horror movies unless I hear like a lot of good things about mm-hmm. it, like Nope and Us, stuff like
Jordan
that.
Peele. All only.
Yeah. For the most part, yeah. If it's not too scary, I'll watch it. If I hear good things about it, I'll watch it. Like, I've seen The Substance. I thought mm-hmm. that was really good. I'm not too... The only thing that I'm not a huge fan of, like, total no-no for me with horror is, like, supernatural horror.
Okay.
I've never seen any of the Paranormal Activity movies.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff scares the hell out of me. Like, yeah. I won't sleep for days. But gore, I'm okay with.
You're fine with gore.
Okay. Derek's the opposite.
Really? Yeah, I was going to say, I don't like horror movies just because I don't like being scared. I know mm-hmm. a lot of people, like, it's exhilarating for them. I just don't like it. I can get behind horror movies that do have good stories
mm-hmm.
Or have other commendable aspects about them. But
do you have any examples?
Well, kind of what you were talking about earlier with, like, a lot of Jordan Peele stuff. You know, I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
Even though it's... kind of horror. It's like horror.
It's a horror comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it literally plays off the trope, the horror tropes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. But like Callie mentioned, I hate gore. I can't stand like torture scenes. I hate that so much. So.
Okay. So no Saw for
ranges.
You.
No.
Darn it. Oh, my favorite.
I'll watch it with you.
It is a doozy to get into for sure. But yeah, is there anything you would like to share in any entertainment stuff that like you're aspiring to do or that you enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, I love watching movies. You should follow me on Letterboxd.
Yes, I was just gonna say Letterboxd.
I gotta plug it at least a few times throughout the episode. Deja Vu, which is DEJOWVU.
And dislike his Superman review.
Give it a thumbs down. Can we do thumbs down?
No. It's not. And I'm gonna make sure it never is.
It should be. Just comment.
I'm gonna ignore all the comments.
Comment thumbs down.
Thumbs down. Yeah.
Hey, whatever brings attention. But yeah, like I said, I love watching movies. One of my hobbies is editing. Hopefully someday I can get into that. I've done it a little bit freelance, but right now it's mainly just for fun.
Cool. Perfect. Well, let's dive into the heart of this episode, why we wanted to do this. And we're going to be diving into the lawsuit that took place between this book, The Little White Trip, A Night in the Pines, which is the longest title I've ever
heard. Some mouthful.
It's crazy.
It's beautiful.
And yeah, the author suing the creators of Cabin in the Woods. So on April 13th, 2015, author Peter Gallagher filed a copyright infringement lawsuit in California federal court system against Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard is the, is the director.
Gallagher. Joss Whedon wrote it, right?
Joss Whedon produced.
He produced.
And Drew Goddard, they co-wrote it. Goddard and Whedon co-wrote it in 3 days. We'll get into that. We'll get into the research of the film. So Gallagher claimed that due to the similarities between the film and his 2006 novel, The Little White Trip, A Night in the Pines, they had used his work without his permission. The lawsuit demanded $10 million in damages. Whedon and Goddard were named as defendants, along with the production company Mutant Enemy and distributor Lionsgate.
I mean, they should win just based on the name Mutant Enemy. That's like an awesome name. Sick. When I saw that pop up, I was like, damn.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
It's over.
So the case ended up being dismissed 5 months later. But let's look at what the judge had to say. Quote, while the two works share a similar premise of students traveling to remote locations and subsequently being murdered, real or otherwise, spoiler, that premise is unprotectable. This is Otis D. Wright, Judge Otis D. Wright. He said, the concept of young people venturing off to such locations and being murdered by some evil force is common in horror films.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that like not the premise of like a lot of horror movies?
It's a trope. It's a trope. It's not
kids getting killed in a cabin.
It's something original that he invented.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of movies that has that same premise.
Exactly. Yeah. So in his suit, Gallander contended that the defendants would have had access to his book because he sold it on the Venice Beach boardwalk at the Santa Monica 3rd Street Promenade and outside the Chinese Theater. So Gallagher reportedly printed 7,500 copies of his book and he would sell it on the street. Which is why it's very hard to find and you had to literally find a PDF. Yeah. You had to pay a subscription to get a PDF of this book. So it is hard to come by and for good reason.
Not hard enough, apparently. Joss Whedon picked it up.
I guess he picked it up and he was like, this is brilliant. I'm going to copy it. He also claimed that the key female characters in his book are named Julie and Dura, and he says that they're similar to the film's protagonists, Jules and Dana. So I guess because they start with the same. I mean, they're similar
Similar.
Yeah,
that's like the closest thing I could think of where I'm like, okay, I guess.
Yeah. There's one other thing.
One other thing. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's basically the lawsuit. Was there anything else you came across? That's what I kind of found while reading online.
Not really.
Yeah. No,
I didn't look too deep into it. I kind of wanted to wait till I was on the pod to hear the result.
Yeah.
Even though
so it was dismissed.
I figured.
Just in terms of like similarities between the book and the movie.
That was what was reported. Yeah. He just claimed that like, well, I was selling it near you guys potentially. So obviously you picked it up and obviously you copied it.
He wasn't even selling it online at this point. Like when was this? When was this first published? Wait, year?
2006.
Mm-hmm.
And he independently published it.
It makes you wonder how much he was selling it for, you know?
I know.
Because now it's like $30.
Like $30, yeah.
And I can't believe anybody would pay for that on the Venice boardwalk.
Is it print or like buy to print or whatever?
I don't think so. I think it's just the book.
Yeah, it might have just been the...
Because I know Amazon does that with like independent authors. It's like you can pay and then they'll print out like that one copy for you. And
is that like an average price? I don't... I've never done that.
No, Amazon. No, definitely. That's really expensive. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's befitting. Great novel.
Yeah. But yeah, do you guys want to dive into the synopsis of the film?
Sure.
Yes.
Please go watch this movie before continuing further with this episode. This is a movie that you definitely want to watch before you want to just go in blind.
And the book.
Yeah, read the book. Get the $30 book. Read it. There's no audiobook.
Buy a few. There's a few thousand of them out there.
Yeah, I'm sure. Alrighty, so Cabin in the Woods. College students Dana, Jules, Kurt, Holden, and Marty are spending their weekend at Kurt's cousin's cabin in the woods. We cut back and forth between the cabin and an underground lab where the lab is remotely controlling the cabin and manipulating the students' behavior with mind-altering drugs. They lure the group into the cabin cellar where Dana finds a diary and she recites some incantations from the diary and then awakens a zombie family. So the lab also releases pheromones to induce Kurt and Jules to have sex outside, and the zombies attack them, killing Jules while Kurt flees. Marty discovers concealed surveillance equipment in his room before being stabbed and dragged off by a zombie. Bye, Marty, for a little bit. Kurt, Holden, and Dana attempt to escape in their RV, but the tunnel collapses and traps them in. Kurt then attempts to jump a ravine on his motorcycle, but crashes into a force field and falls to his death.
Which that was awesome, by
so
the way.
Funny.
It was awesome.
That was funny.
The thing is, because we have like the bird that flies in the force field, so you already know it's going to happen. Yeah. I kind of wish they kept it as a surprise. That. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been more shocking. It was kind of sad, like watching like his body like limply just fall and then, like collide with the wall several times before it goes wherever it does.
Yeah. So yeah, Kurt jumps the ravine, but he dies. Holden is then killed by a zombie while driving the RV, causing it to crash into a lake. Dana manages to escape drowning, but a zombie corners and attacks her. Meanwhile, the lab employees are celebrating because they think that they've been successful in their ritual, believing that Dana is the last survivor. However, Marty comes to her rescue, having survived the ambush. He takes her to a hidden elevator and they descend into the lab and discover a collection of monsters in cages. The pair release all the monsters, which wreak havoc and slaughter the lab staff. Dana and Marty then discover an ancient temple where the facility's director confronts them. She explains that the annual human sacrifice rituals are held worldwide to appease the ancient ones. Each region of the world has its own ritual, and the American ritual involves the sacrifice of five archetypes. The whore, the athlete, the scholar, the fool, and the virgin. The director urges Dana to kill Marty and complete the ritual, but while Dana considers it, a werewolf suddenly attacks her. Marty shoots the werewolf and scares it off, and also a zombie kid comes and attacks the director, and they both fall into the pit, whatever. Deciding that the humanity is not worth saving, Dana and Marty apologize to each other as the temple floor collapses. A giant hand bursts out of the ground, destroying the cabin, the facility, and eventually the world, perhaps. And which that
one,
is...
Which one are you summarizing again?
Yeah, they're very similar, right?
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
Can't tell the difference. Can't tell.
So yeah, that is the synopsis of the film. Would you guys like to learn a little bit about this film?
I'd love to.
Let's do it. The film was released in 2011. It's a horror comedy directed by Drew Goddard. He's also known for Lost, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Cloverfield. This movie was also produced by Joss Whedon. Goddard and Whedon, they previously worked on Buffy together. They wrote this screenplay in 3 days, describing it as an attempt to, quote, revitalize the slasher film genre, and as a critical satire on torture porn. You guys are aware what the torture porn subgenre is?
I could infer.
Okay, so like Saw, Hostel, the stuff that like came out in the early 2000s. So concerning the sheer number of creatures to be designed and made for the film, AFX Studio estimated that close to 1,000 people were turned into one of 60 different monster types. Definitely the most iconic moment of the film, I feel like.
It was pretty awesome.
Seeing all those different monsters. What was your favorite monster?
Oh, that's a good question.
There were a few.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to remember what exactly I said. There was like a giant snake. Mm-hmm. And there was that guy with like the saws or yeah. all around his head.
That's my favorite. He kind of reminded me of like Hellraiser, you know?
That's exactly because he has like the sphere and it's like supposed to be like the Hellraiser box. He's my favorite. He's really cool. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering what monster was associated with that necklace that Jules almost put around her neck.
Yeah, there's so many. I want to like know. Because
I recognized all the other monsters that was associated with like each item, but I didn't know what the necklace was.
Yeah, I wonder. Because I didn't mention it in the summary, but basically they go down into the cellar and there are like different objects and stuff and they end up being associated with the different monsters we see at the end of the film. So if you like pick one up and you engage with it, then that's the monster that's gonna come attack you.
Choose your own fate story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd say my favorite was the merman, you know?
Yeah.
That was
like kind of clawing on the ground.
He got to see the merman. We were waiting
for that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanna know what would have happened if they selected it. Like, would they have been drawn into the lake or something? I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, because he's very slow. Like, I feel like you could just kind of run away from him. Yeah. But then where do you go? Like, you're literally stuck in this, like, force field.
Maybe it starts closing, like Fortnite. Ooh, like, the storm.
Yeah. So the thermal coffee mug / bong was actually a fully functional mug and bong.
That was awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah. That was the best prop.
Mm-hmm. The honestly, prototype cost $5,000 to make.
Dang.
What? Crazy.
Honestly, the producers of The Cabin in the Woods should be suing Adam Sandler. Because, like, it looks very similar to, like, doesn't he have, like, a thermos that he has, like, it's like a multi-tool?
What movie? Wait, really?
In Huey Halloween.
I haven't seen it.
Which one? Don't like, bother. The first one?
What?
The first Huey Halloween?
There's only one.
I thought there was two.
I'm pretty sure there's not.
Really?
I'd be shocked if there was more than one. It was so bad. I swear
there was two. I'm going to Google this right now. Tubi I'm Halloween. Not crazy, I swear. Tubi?
You just imagined a whole other movie.
There's a strong possibility of a Huey Halloween 2.
Really?
Due to Adam Sandler's ongoing deal with Netflix.
I think Adam Sandler has a strong possibility for every single one of his movies having a sequel after Happy Gilmore.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be making bank next. Yeah.
Which, go watch it. So bad, but so fun.
Back to.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say about the mug bong thing. Like how a lot of the things that are introduced at the beginning actually like come into play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what every good script should do, but like for a lot, I mean, you never know. But yeah, I just think it was fun seeing it come back and like actually, you know, and like the same with the merman. It's like we've been waiting for this to happen and then it finally happened. So really appreciate that about this movie. So the failed rituals from other countries are references to various classic movies and monsters. The Kyoto ritual is a reference to The Ring, and the Stockholm ritual is a reference to John Carpenter's The Thing. I really want to see those movies now. Like, there's so many little details like I want to know more about.
Wasn't the one in Spain like a giant minotaur laying on the ground?
Oh, what was that?
I couldn't make out. I couldn't tell what was. I really couldn't on tell. The ground.
Yeah,
it was some large, or maybe it was like a gorilla. Maybe it was like a large
King,
ape.
I know one of them. I think was a reference to King Kong, but I couldn't. I didn't like look at the clip again to
that
see.
That was probably it.
Okay,
it could have been King Kong.
Yeah, but that's like a Japanese thing. So that doesn't make any sense.
Hmm. Is it
King Kong?
Oh, maybe.
Oh, I'm thinking. I mean, I'm thinking of Godzilla. Wait, where's King Kong originate from? Is King Kong like an American thing?
I think it was like. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it is.
That's what Donkey Kong is based on. Which is Japanese? I don't know. There's a lot of intertwined apes here.
International mingling. Yeah. My last fact is that during the lake scene, Marty doesn't jump in the lake with everyone else. This was due to the fact that the actor Fran Kranz, I hope I'm getting that right, noticeably was in good shape, if not better shape than the other male actors. So
wait, that's why he didn't swim?
Flex,
because he was ripped?
Yeah. So in the commentary for the film, the writers joke that if Marty were shown being fit, that it would ruin the character.
I mean, I'm not going to argue against that.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense for his character.
It does.
I wouldn't.
A stoner? I don't associate them with being like
jacked.
Yeah. I'd be shocked if Marty took off his shirt and he was like ripped.
Yeah.
Knowing Marty's character.
Yeah.
Definitely. So those were all my facts, my movie facts. Are you guys ready to... I'm not ready to do this.
What, talk about the book?
Talk about the book. Yeah, we've talked about the film.
Should we give our opinions on the movie first, or should we save all our opinions till after all the facts?
It's difficult because I don't know how I want this to go. What are your... So maybe if you guys have some initial thoughts, top of the head thoughts.
On anything.
On the movie. I think first on the movie... I think the characters seemed a little inconsistent. We watched this movie with Gerald.
My roommate, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Gerald is Derek's roommate. And he made a comment. It was during the scene when they were swimming at the lake.
Uh-huh.
And there was a moment with Jules and she didn't want to swim for some reason. I can't remember why. Was it because she just dyed her hair?
I'm not sure.
Hmm. I don't remember
that. The only way, like, I would kind of push back against that idea just because I think the differences in the characterization throughout the first act is, like, purposeful to show that, because that's not how they actually are.
They don't fall into the archetypes.
Yeah, they were, like, manipulated through chemicals to fall into those archetypes, you know? Because, like, they was talking about how, he was saying, like, oh, like, he's a sociology major. Like, what is he talking about? You know, an egghead, you know?
Yeah.
He's never been dumber. Like that
Chris
before.
Hemsworth character.
Yeah.
He becomes kind of dumber. And then the blonde girl, she becomes the quote unquote whore. But she's like, I mean, we don't really know much about her before, but she's like kind of like chill.
Yeah, I was going to say. She just... likes her boyfriend.
Yeah, that's kind of all we know about
maybe
her.
Maybe that's why I thought the characters seemed inconsistent, because they were being manipulated by the like drugs that they were pumping into the simulation.
Yeah, like even Dana becomes like she easily falls into like, oh, I'm gonna pick up this book. You know, she's also being manipulated. Marty's the only one that doesn't get manipulated because he's smoking the entire time.
Yeah.
You know what that means.
Yeah.
Smoke's
always
24/7,
be high.
You know?
You can never be in.
It protects you from microplastics.
Exactly.
And,
and then, of course, Holden is brought into this group and he becomes the smart one, the quote-unquote scholar.
I thought he was going to be the hero of the group. But then, surprisingly, Chris Hemsworth character, what was his name again?
His name is Kurt.
Kurt became the hero of the group, surprisingly. I thought it was going to be the other guy.
Yeah.
Holden, yeah. I guess this movie, it's a compact script and it works very well. But yeah, I wish we got a little bit more of these characters before being at the cabin and before they're manipulated. I think that would have helped clear the confusion about who these characters are, what are their motivations. Because, Holden, the only difference between the Holden before and after is he wears glasses.
Which, you know,
That's what you,
that
every
just means
smart
that
person
you're smart.
Yeah, wears glasses.
It's been proven that it boosts your IQ like 40 points.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I left my
it
glasses
unlocked,
in the car.
It's like Scarlett Johansson in that one movie. It unlocks
Lucy?
Different aspects of
that movie is also terrible, but awesome. Kind of like,
and not accurate.
Kind of like the book, but not the awesome part.
Yeah. Our book characters are Matt, Dura, Ian, Julia, and Sam. I have thoughts on these characters. Do you guys have thoughts before I dive into mine?
Okay. I thought Matt was so annoying.
Oh,
The narrator, the self-insert.
He literally, this author thinks so highly of himself. It's obvious
because there were so many moments of it. Oh hi, what's
that? We have a cat on set.
She's crap.
Pod cat.
She's crashing the pod. Oh well. So what was I saying?
The narrator.
Yeah. There were so many moments in the book where he's just going like wink wink nudge nudge and it's like shut up,
like the meta author. The camera pans to the left.
Oh my god.
At
he's
least
like,
that's how
I'm
it would go.
he was like being so jokey in it too. That's what I meant. I don't know if I said this at the top of the episode, but the writing felt very amateur. Mm-hmm. Like freshman just taking writing courses. Like it felt very like a new writer. And mm-hmm. it was mostly because he literally kept like talking directly to the audience, which mm-hmm. I guess the whole point is he's writing about his experience, but it's still, or no, it's like he's paying someone else to write his book.
Yeah, Peter.
That's the
right?
idea. Yeah. The idea is Matt, this fictional character, is paying Peter Gallagher to write about his story.
Oh,
which
I
is
was wondering
awesome.
Who Peter was. I was
so
like, who's
cool.
Peter?
Yeah. Such a great
who's
idea.
Who's this Peter, though? Yeah.
And they have it in Comic Sans. And the-
yeah. Mm-hmm.
My issues was with the female characters, how yeah. we wrote them. Very bad. He explains that Julia is, quote, like the blonde trophy wife with nothing going on upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Very God. Cool.
It's foreshadowing because she doesn't go upstairs.
Does she does, though.
She does.
At some point,
does.
But like at the final thing, you know, that she like, he goes upstairs.
Yeah,
and
that
she...
whole conclusion was just all over the place. I was yeah. like, where are you at in this house? I don't know. And he also describes his love interest as a sexy Latina with a spicy attitude.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was...
And also having like lips like a cartoon character.
Yes. Let me... I made some notes.
Is that supposed to be a good thing or a bad thing?
It's well, supposed to be a good thing, character? Right? That's what I don't know.
She did something and he described it as like... She's like, oh, I knew she was emotional.
That's what I wrote. I read this as saying.
Yeah, she said she's not she's emotional, not crazy emotional or female emotional, but far too
far too delicate
for this world.
Yeah, I wrote that down too.
So like, spicy Latina. That's like delicate.
But she's not like other girls.
But not
and
like
she
other
doesn't
girls.
Care about her appearance, but she still looks good.
Yeah, like, especially
oh,
in
I
green
remember
pants.
Reading that part.
Oh my God, this guy. Another thing. About this author is he gives creep. He describes Dura's ass as, quote, teenage perfection.
Yes. I was talking to Callie about this scene. Oh, I don't know if we want to get into it yet, but this scene.
When Matt and Dura hook up at
yes,
the cabin.
At the cabin, when he describes the bra. You know
oh,
what I'm
he easily
and
he's like I easily unlocked.
No. He says, "Okay, wait, hold on, let me see."
You, but I think you wrote the quote down. Yeah.
Give me one moment. Yeah. I'll find it.
A difference between the book and the movie, among many, is that the group in the movie are adults. They're in college, and they get invited to Kurt's cousin's cabin. Although we learn that Kurt actually doesn't have a cousin. And then the group in the book are teens just graduating from high school, and they win mm-hmm. a ski trip. And a free stay at a nice cabin.
Yeah.
I found the quote, by the way.
Okay.
When I read this, I paused and I was like, what the hell is this dude on about? Like, how old is this guy? Because it says, without a struggle, I unhooked her bra, loosening the elastic tension and letting gravity and young skin fight for a balance.
I didn't remember that. What's his obsession with teenagers?
The young skin is crazy.
Oh my God.
I had to pause for a moment. Now, didn't one of them talk about like how they wish they could be like, or like, no, when he was talking about like the girls fighting in the shower, he's like, were you both naked? He's like, yeah, we were in the shower. Was everybody naked?
Yeah. Oh, I totally forgot about the whole like graduating. They're like waiting to graduate.
Which
what was the point
so
of that?
So boring, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that brings me to another comment that I have about just the book as a whole. Half the book
didn't
they're
exist.
Not even at the cabin yet.
Yeah.
It took so long. There was so much exposition. I just wanted to get to the interesting part. Mm-hmm. Like,
and then this and the cabin stuff was so quick too.
Yeah. It was very quick.
Yeah.
How many chapters were they still graduating? They
I
were
think
just
they got
at
to the
ceremony.
Cabin and chapter like 20.
Wow.
And they're
out of 33.
Oh my God.
It took forever.
Yeah. So let's drive to the cabin, shall we? In the book, when going to the cabin, they get told by multiple people that the previous owners of the house that they're staying at, the husband murdered his family and may or may not be hiding in the woods, question mark. And everybody moved out in the area. Is that what they said? Like,
yeah,
there's nobody
yeah.
else living there?
The surrounding residences after that happened, they all kind
they
of
left.
Moved
crazy.
Out.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I would.
they try searching this up on the net.
The net.
They call it the net. But they can't find anything about this. So they kind of brush it off as a joke. In the film, they come across your typical horror movie harbinger at a gas station who is saying really creepy stuff. Your typical redneck Harbin. Like, you can imagine, like, the gas station, like, creepy guy from Hills Have Eyes or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, that's kind of the vibe. Creepy gas station.
They did also have a creepy gas station in the movie.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Oh, wait, are we talking about this?
Yeah, I know, they're so similar.
Yeah, I'm talking about the differences with the people they come across.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Versus, like, I'm assuming you're getting, like, the diner.
Yeah, so they come up, their first, like, warning, Matt, right?
Yeah.
Matt, he's talking to the waiter, and the waiter's telling him about, you know, there's this creepy guy, this guy murdered his family and then is hiding out in the woods. And then he tells him, like, he gives him directions, and he's like, don't go to that house. I don't know. I was confused.
Go to the same place, but take the shortcut.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's what it was.
For some
reason. Trying to give him a shortcut. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So they follow these directions. Matt doesn't tell anybody about this encounter, and the directions take them to this family that's also living in the woods, and they're freaking out because they have people on their property that they don't know.
Yeah.
Then this family tells them that guy who murdered the family killed their son.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the husband.
19?
Yeah, he was their 19-year-old son, but they also have young children. So Matt's kind of like, that's weird. And then they also call him different names. And so he's like, that's also weird. You guys don't know your own son's name. From the get, like, there's some weird stuff going on. There's some creepy stuff.
A little few inconsistencies, or so it seems.
So in the film, we start seeing the characters fitting into their horror movie tropes, like we mentioned, due to the drugs that are entering their system. Everyone except Marty, who was smoking the whole time. The group parties, they swim in the lake, they go into a creepy basement. So, you know, all your typical horror movie things. In the book, they hang out that first night at the cabin, and they're visited by a stranger claiming to need a phone. They let this dude enter their house, even though he is very sus. They find out later that none of their phones even get service out there. So they're like, why did he say that he called the car people? He was claiming...
He said he made several calls.
Yeah.
He had a flat tire. Yeah. He didn't realize it. The rubber got ripped up and caught in his axle, so he needed to call a tow.
Mm-hmm. And he has a son, like, staying in his car, so he needs to, like, hurry up. Which, like, why would you keep your son in a car miles away?
Or your son alone? Because
it was snowing, you know? And he said the heater still worked, so... Mm. And he didn't know how far he was going to have to walk.
Yeah, that's smart. Leave your child when you could be walking miles away.
Child unattended.
Yeah.
In this infamous woods.
Mm-hmm. With the serial killer on the loose. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they let this guy in. He says he makes a couple calls, but they don't actually get service. So they're like, oh, he lied.
And he has two full glasses of water. He's very thirsty.
Yeah, he's very thirsty. That's why he wants to come into the house. And Matt lets him, even though he knows, like, this is weird. He's like, you can come in, I guess.
I was actually thinking about, like, what was the point of that? Because, like, a lot of the other things they went back to, but I feel like maybe it was mentioned, was, like, my theory is that he probably did something to the phone while they weren't looking.
Like, just the landline? They couldn't,
yeah. Or no, like, because they borrowed the cell phone.
Yeah, he borrowed
it. So, like, I think he messed with the cell phone so they couldn't contact people.
Oh.
That would be my guess, because they don't really mention it from what I recall. Maybe I forgot.
Yeah,
about
that. I mean, I kind of took it as like, oh, maybe he's scoping out the house, you know?
Right.
But if it's all a setup, then they would know what the house.
Yeah,
the inside of the house.
It's probably just like a PA.
Cameras,
you know?
In there everywhere.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
So they did a couple things in the house, like they took away all the knives.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not exactly sure what he was trying to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess we don't really know.
Maybe he was a producer and they're like, get up there. Go on.
You want your name in the credits.
Interact with the talent for a bit. Yeah. Promise we won't cut it.
So in the book, a lot of this stuff at the cabin happens quickly, like we mentioned. But the next day, they go on a skiing trip, except Sam, who stays behind. When they get back to the cabin after their fun skiing day, Sam is missing, and that's when all the chaos ensues. Everything kind of escalates from this point on. I couldn't remember they come to the back to the house. They're like, oh shoot, the car's missing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to go follow these tracks because they think he got into an accident in the woods.
Yeah.
They saw like there was like tired tracks on the cement in the garage, which implied that he sped out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. So they go into the woods and they come across the car. It's been in a car wreck. It's crashed into a tree. And inside they find an arm. And it might be Sam's arm.
Wearing Sam's
ring. It had his ring.
Yes, his high school ring.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, now they're freaking out. They're like, we for sure have a murderer on the loose. Yeah, the next person that dies, quote unquote, is Dana. She gets pulled.
Dura.
Yeah. Oops. Oh, my God.
Again, so similar.
Yeah.
Copyright worthy.
She gets pulled out of the window. And I did like this where he goes and like reaches out the window and he does not get cut on the glass.
Yeah.
So it has to be like that movie glass, jelly kind of
stuff. Well, that was a cool detail.
Well, didn't he like try to go after them, but he slipped and like hit his head on like a chair and like he was all over these glass shards. And he's like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he's like, oh, I'm not even bleeding. Like, this blood is from Dura.
Or he's unbreakable.
He's, yeah.
Or he's Bruce Willis.
He's
that
thing,
moment of Dura getting pulled out of the window that reminded me of that. Oh, what was the video game? There was this horror video game where a girl died the same way. I think it was Until Dawn. I want to say it was Until Dawn.
That would make sense. Yeah. Another game. I mean, yeah, another story about archetypes getting choose
another
your own
adventure.
Another
story about kids.
He
in
should
a cabin.
See them next. He should
honestly, yeah. See the quarry?
Yeah. Yeah, so Dura's gone. Doesn't he make a point that, like, oh, if anyone were to die first, it would be Julie? I feel like he said that at one point.
Probably.
At the beginning. Yeah.
It would be a girl.
I wouldn't put it past
him. It would be a blonde girl. Yeah.
It wouldn't be me, the clever one.
Yeah, the smart one.
The conniving one.
Yeah, who's so cool and everyone likes. Thoughts on Ian? We haven't really talked about him. The alcoholic.
Yeah, Ian was also pretty inconsistent.
He found an old flask.
Yeah,
at graduation.
High school, yeah.
We don't know how old it is. We don't know what was in the flask, but he was like...
Doesn't matter.
It's better with age, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, my
Whatever
God.
Is in there.
What did Julius see in this guy? He's an alcoholic at 18.
Okay, but he was also able to like get alcohol.
He uses a homeless guy to go and get.
How much do you think they paid the homeless guy?
I don't know. Is he below or above the line? Who knows?
Also, maybe we should mention like how the book ends because we keep alluding to like production terms.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, should we talk about the books?
Okay.
Just
yeah.
how it concludes real quick.
So, okay. Basically, first, like we mentioned at this during the synopsis, how the film concludes is that they unleash all these monsters on the lab people. Everyone starts getting killed off. They discover like all these, how do you describe it? On the walls, they have these like carvings in blood.
Or a ritual.
Ritualistic carvings. And they decide, you know what? We're going to just... let the world die. That's how the film ends.
The giant arm comes up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's implied that the world ends.
Yeah.
Because these evil gods come up from below.
Yeah. They need sacrifices every year. And since the other country's sacrifices failed, the American sacrifice is the last like chance, basically.
Yeah.
And they're like, Dana has the opportunity to kill Marty since he's the fool and he's the one that needs to die. She could live or die. It doesn't really matter because she's the quote unquote virgin.
Yeah.
They just decide, I guess we're just going to let all of humanity die. And that's kind of how the movie ends.
I don't know. I kind of have faith in those like Kyoto schoolgirls. Like, I think
they already did it. They already
well, that's what I'm saying.
Defeated the monster.
I think they could probably push back the ancient ones.
Which with their ritual
crazy
holding hands thingy.
That's so Japan funny is that like they we're gonna sacrifice children for this. Like
yeah
because is the prophecy different
if it's
in the other countries?
They're saying different cultures have different like rituals, so I would hope the children didn't fit those archetypes.
Yeah, because I was like a classroom full of
like schoolgirls
yeah.
The ritual, the American ritual follows these archetypes, but it seems like in these other places they have different rituals. And I guess in Japan, they're like school children.
Children.
I mean, well, no, that's the thing. They said all of them revolve around like purity, I think.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
They're like, that's the consistent thing throughout all the cultures.
They like need a, but the virgin doesn't have to die.
Correct.
Yeah.
Purity has to be made impure, like tortured, essentially.
Yeah, they did mention something about, oh, the virgin has to suffer in some capacity.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. She doesn't necessarily have to die, but she has to suffer a little bit.
Okay. Which I would argue those schoolgirls probably did suffer.
I think so. Even though they turned the Ringu into a frog, but like with the power of friendship.
That was so funny.
But yeah, let's dive into the book twist. So that was the film twist. Let's dive into the book twist. The teens are, quote unquote, getting killed off by multiple killers. That's what Matt thinks. The main character, Matt, he's the last one left alive when a cop shows up. We soon get the reveal that this was just all a prank, bro. And that this was all just filmed as a, quote, reality horror movie. Which is, they apparently signed a contract that said, hey, we're cool with this happening, but they didn't know. They didn't know they were being filmed.
When did signing,
they sign that?
They thought they were signing the insurance for the rental car.
For the rental car,
right. Yeah. And Sam was like, we should maybe read this.
And notice that it doesn't mention SUV at all.
Did it really?
No. I mean, I figured like if you're reading the contract on that, it probably didn't mention all that stuff.
It was probably like page 20 of however this like contract, however long this contract was. But so they signed this contract basically stating that they agree to be in this reality horror film. And so everything has been staged. Nobody actually is dead. Basically, when somebody gets killed off, they're taken to this after party. And yeah, so that's the twist.
And everyone thought it was Matt that
signed them up for it.
Oh yeah, they're pissed off at Matt.
That's another one of my complaints. Like, it seemed like to me, in terms of like the writing for the female characters, what was the author's name?
Peter Gallagher.
Peter wanted to just like throw one more curveball and be like, man, women don't understand. Let me make Dura mad at him.
Yeah.
For no reason.
For like a second, though.
For just a second. We're just going to like, you know, include a little tension. A little bit of that.
A little spice.
Because literally immediately after, he's like, no, I didn't. And she's like, oh, okay.
Actually, I guess.
I thought my stomach was ripped open. But
yeah. I want to know what you guys think because they go to the school carnival. We haven't really talked about that. Mm-hmm. And they put all these tickets into winning the ski trip. Like, if you put your tickets in that you win, there's like different prizes, and one of them was a ski trip. Mm-hmm. Did they purposely pick out this group of teens? Is that what it's alluding to?
Yeah, because Matt mentions at the end that he brings up the fact that he remembered them pulling the number.
Like, hesitating
and looking at them before they even read the number.
Then why? I want to know why they specifically chose this group of
because
random
they were
teens.
The coolest
kids
awesome,
in town.
Self-aware meta.
Yeah.
Teens out there.
They're so cool. The group, they're pissed off by this, obviously, for a bit. They sue the production company because they're only given like $5,000 for this. And they sue them for $5 million each.
No, $7 million
each. $7
million? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Honestly? Sign me up.
You would want to do a reality horror movie?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. But for only if you knew...
Only if I knew I could sue them afterwards.
Okay, well, the whole thing is you wouldn't know.
I'll take the risk.
Okay. So, yeah, they sue them. They each become millionaires at the ripe age of 18. And they all move to Hollywood? No, two of them.
Moved to Beverly Hills.
Yeah. Near the Grove.
Near the Grove. Yes! They mentioned that it's near the Grove. They probably broke up at Erewhon.
Yeah, Jules.
Over
so
the,
Ian and
what is it?
Ian and Jules.
They stay together. They moved to Beverly Hills.
Yeah. And then they eventually broke up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
Matt and Dura moved to Topanga.
They did.
They have a house, like a few, they two houses on their own, a few houses like apart. But they lived pretty close to
each other.
Yeah,
they lived a few doors down from each other.
So funny to me. So she could remain the girl next door.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But yeah, so they're enjoying their millionaire life, but then they, I guess they're not that traumatized by the experience because they're down to like record voiceover for this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also go to the movie premiere only like a year after.
Oh.
Well, no, the movie didn't come out yet.
Not yet, but they recorded voiceover.
They said they were down for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're down to go to the movie premiere. So I guess they're fine with it.
I can't speak on behalf of somebody who may have been traumatized thinking they were getting killed one by one next to their friends.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be involved, but I guess
it could be kind of cool.
I feel like I'd be so pissed. I'd take the money and just make sure that movie doesn't see the light of day.
I would be anonymous.
I'd want to watch it.
Really?
At least before it came out.
Oh my god!
Like I'd want to go to a preview
screening. How good could it even be though? Because even just reading it, I'm like, this is a boring movie.
I'd be like sitting there, like on like opening night. I'm like leaning over to the random person next to me, like this is the part where I thought I was dead. This is the part where I like was praying to God. I watched my my girlfriend get ripped out of a window.
Yeah.
And a knife plunge into her chest. Awesome experience.
You could be the one putting in the IMDb trivia. Mm-hmm. Like, this actually happened and this happened.
Did you know one of the actors had an ingrown toenail? I won't say
who.
Pretty
interesting. That's basically the plot of the book.
Mm-hmm. Also, terrible last line of the book.
Oh my
like,
God.
The last line of the book. Let me pull it up. I think the implication there is that Peter thought this was going to get adapted into a movie. So it could be like extra meta because the final line of the book goes, oh, yeah. And the questions everyone's wondering, is the book better than the movie? In this case, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
A wink, a wink. Producers, please make this into a film.
And then Joss Whedon did it and he got pissed. Like, make up your mind, dude.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. You said there was another thing that was similar to The Cabin in the Woods, potentially.
Yes. The only other thing that I was like, okay, that was like, crazy similar is the fact that both of them knocked over a vase and there was a camera in the vase.
Yeah. Yeah.
True. Yeah. We didn't talk about that, but he's reaching for like where he thinks a knife is going to be. Mm-hmm. But it's not there because they took out all the sharp things. And then he breaks over a vase and inside is camera equipment.
Mm-hmm.
That is. You know.
And it's the same thing in The Cabin in the Woods. He knocks over a vase. And he finds like a wire camera that he's like looking at.
Yeah. And then Marty says, I'm in a reality TV show.
They were mocking him. They were mocking Peter.
Yeah. I believe
to
it.
To his face.
I believe before it. He sued. Peter, sue again.
You got it this time.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Was there anything else to talk about?
What if Peter sees this?
What are you doing now, Peter?
I'm not trying to clown on you, Peter. I think it takes a lot to write a book, you know.
Can we just talk about this PDF and how screwed up it was though?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was so frustrating to read on Kindle because the first page of the chapter would be perfect.
Perfect. Yeah.
The rest, so tiny.
So small.
I was like, this sucks. My eyes were straining.
I read it on my phone. Yeah. I downloaded the Kindle app on my phone and then asked it to delete all the formatting and it actually worked out really well for me.
How can you do that?
I just told it to like ignore, like there was an option to just like ignore all that stuff and it made it big so I didn't have to like zoom in every page.
Stop.
I just had to tap. I will say I do think it cut out lines here and there.
Oh, who needs them?
But like I only noticed it once and I was like, wait, like that doesn't make any sense. And then I went to the book and it was like there was an extra line. So I have no clue how much of the book I missed. I could have missed
10% of it.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think so because like everything else was pretty consistent. It made sense. There weren't any other moments. So I was like, how did we get here? And in which case, there were actually some instances in which that happened. But then when I went back to the PDF, that's just how it was written. So more so a problem with the how it was written rather than
the
formatting.
Yeah. Anyway, I had big complaints with this PD. It just made the experience so much worse.
Yep. Yeah. Peter, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, literally.
Please make an audiobook.
Why? Yes. Please.
Actually. Narrate it yourself, honestly. I'll narrate it for you.
He'll narrate it for you.
Just don't sue me. What? I'm going to like release the audiobook and he's like, this is exactly like my book.
Like, oh. He sues you.
Yeah. Peter, we have a contract.
I think with the book, there was so much that they could have cut out. Like, I didn't need all that exposition in the first half.
Yeah.
To be able to get to the cabin.
Yeah. I agree.
I was taking notes on things that I thought were interesting because I thought they were going to be like brought back up later.
Mm-hmm. So did you guys watch the movie and then like finish the book today? So
yeah,
she's exposing us for finishing it, both of them today.
We finished it very last minute.
Okay.
We finished the book this morning.
Yeah, we finished the book this morning and then we watched the movie before we got here.
Had either of you seen the movie before?
I had seen the movie a long time ago.
Oh, okay. I'd seen parts of it. Like that part with Julia, the blonde girl. I've seen the scene where she's like making out with the
awful
wolf, which was awesome.
Head. I hated that.
So gross.
It really like showed what it was like to be an alpha, you know? That's how like women interact with alphas mm-hmm. in the world.
Uh-uh. They actually put like sugar on it to make it not as bad of an experience for her.
Did they really?
Yeah, on the tongue. Mm-hmm.
Really?
That's good.
Yeah. Because it looks sick. It looks so gross.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I had watched the movie. I've seen it a few times. And so I was like, well, surely this book will have a bit more, maybe?
No. No.
Perhaps not.
I just imagine thinking that your book is as good as this movie. That's pretty
crazy. Well, hold on now. You know, I don't want to throw any shade at my friend Peter here.
Yeah. You're trying to get an audiobook deal.
Yeah. Peter. Great book. Great stuff. I got you.
I will say I did enjoy the second half a little more. The first half was boring.
Okay, yeah.
But the second half was pretty fun because it went... All the crazy stuff happened like really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess without, you know, having no idea about The Cabin in the Woods, if you just read this book on its own, would you like it?
I think I would actually. I know I'm kind of like clowning on it a lot because there are a lot of things that are like silly about the book.
Yeah.
Sexist. And
sexist.
Very dated.
And a little bit dated. It was 2006. You know, that's 20 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
Honestly speaking, I'm making it sound like I enjoyed it a lot less than I did. I didn't like hate reading it. I think if I were to rate it, I would still give it like 5 out of 10, you know?
Okay.
Like it was 50, still 50. An enjoyable read for the most part. Like, you know, like I said, the beginning was a little bit boring,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I'm not going to say that there weren't overarching themes. And I think going into it, knowing a little bit about the copyright thing and then comparing it to the movie, I think I already kind of had a negative view on it from the outset. So I was kind of looking more for plot inconsistencies and like looking to, you know, kind of fixate on these little problems that maybe I wouldn't have prior. I mean, I'm not going to say that I looked over the book with a fine, like, analyzing all the themes and everything as I may for a book that I really enjoy, but mm-hmm. yeah
I was trying to imagine if I read this in like my horror book club I'm in on its own. I think the title's bad, the cover is really bad.
Yeah. Isn't it just like a hand like holding like a yellow flower?
What does that have
something?
To do with
what was the
anything?
Point of that?
Yeah.
that was Sam's hand.
Oh yeah!
After it got picked apart by the raccoon that he had beef with.
The raccoon.
That
scene.
Is another. That in of itself is copyright worthy. They mention a raccoon in A Cabin in the Woods.
That was pretty sick.
Yeah, he says he's going to turn it into a hat.
Mm-hmm.
That was the same raccoon that was sprayed with water, viciously, in the book. Viciously.
Yeah.
I felt so bad for it.
Yeah, he was trying to like spray all these raccoons off the patio, and it's just, and then one came like running up to him, like he was a dangerous raccoon.
Well, it was a metaphor for the group, I think. That was Matt. Oh, you know, yeah. All the other ones got sprayed off. Like, but he was like headstrong. He's like, you know, I'm getting you.
Yeah.
And then right before he was able to get him, the screen door closed, and he had to watch them. Oh, the girl
you like? I'm gonna take her.
No. Like seriously, like he closed this door right in front of the raccoon, and he just watched them through the glass, almost like Matt was watching through the camera lens at everybody, egging him on.
Camera lens.
Yeah, like the producers were Sam spraying the raccoon, which was Matt.
My brain is too fried for this metaphor. Anyway.
I see what you're doing for, Peter.
There's a lot of layers to this book. It's very deep. So what do you think you would like this if you had no idea about the lawsuit or anything?
Like personally, I would give the book like 3 stars on Goodreads.
Wow. Okay. Because I gave it 1 star.
A 3 out of 3.
Okay, I was not enjoying the first half.
Get to the
cabin.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole part where they like ripped his robe. I was like,
and then it started getting interesting. I enjoyed that.
He had bad luck. That was the whole thing that didn't come into play at all. Sam having supposedly bad luck.
Well, I mean, he did have pretty bad luck. He the girl that he had a crush on like immediately had sex with his friend, which caused him to stay home and inevitably get murdered.
Quote unquote
murdered. Yeah.
Yeah. No, not even. He had the least traumatic experience because they just pulled up and were like, "Hey, you want to come with us?
Listen, we could we're pretend filming a YouTube to stab video. You, but come on, let's just go."
Mr. Beast is gonna pay you $5 million. sorry. What was your final thoughts? You were gonna give it 3 out of 5 on Goodreads.
Yeah, 3 out of 5 on Goodreads because like I said, I wasn't really enjoying the first half of the book. I was just like, get to the good part already. And then it got to the good part. And then I enjoyed that part.
Okay.
Like that part was really fun. I don't know. The epilogue. Did we need the epilogue?
It was so long.
Very long. I mean, we needed it, but it was not all needed.
No. It just felt like even like the snowboarding stuff that they were doing was like, again, do we need any of this? Like, I get that's why they went on this trip, but it just, and then Ian ends up stealing alcohol from the bar, and it's just like, what's the point of any of this? Just to get them away from the house, basically.
From the bar.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of things that are forgettable for sure.
The movie was fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of dumb. The plot's a little like out there ridiculous, but it was a fun watch.
Very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely I would recommend the movie. I would recommend the book to a specific kind of person. It wouldn't be a blanket recommendation.
Yeah.
What's the specific person?
Joss Whedon.
I wonder if they read it after the fact. I can't believe the judge had to read it. The judge had to read this book.
He had to read it.
I just imagine like the judge like sitting in front of a fireplace at home reading about like gravity fighting young skin.
Oh my God.
That was when immediately he was like, no.
Yeah.
This ain't making it.
This lawsuit is done. Canceled. I am also going to recommend the film. I think it's very fun. I think it's unique. I would say don't waste your time with this book. There are better books out there.
I agree. There are better books out there.
Why do you seem shocked?
Well...
The Little White Trip in A Night in the Pines. He would recommend that to a certain person.
Soon to be narrated.
Yeah.
By me. Peter, keep me in mind. I don't have to do vocal fry the whole time.
Reach out on LinkedIn.
This is just how I talk, but I can do voices.
Yeah. Who would be your... What's your Matt voice?
Hey, what's up? It's me, Matt. Hey, Matt. It's me, Ian. Ian.
Dura?
Hola. I'm spicy.
Stop. Stop right now.
Okay.
Jules. Julie. If you're going to do all of them, might as well do the last girl. Yeah, you got to finish.
How would she... What's something she says?
Dude, our Father in Heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
She does pray.
Yeah. To our Father in Heaven. That's what she'd say. And that's how she'd sound too.
Oh, very deep. Okay. Yeah, they get all creeped out because she's like praying like repeatedly and they're like, please stop. We're in a very stressful situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Perfect. You've got the job.
Thank you.
This versus that. ski trip versus staying at a cabin. What would you want to do?
I think skiing's pretty fun.
Yeah. You like skiing?
I think if it's, it depends on the cabin for me.
Yeah.
If it looks anything like the cabin, cabin in the woods,
really no way.
Skiing's fun.
What about the cabin in the book? It seems awesome. Pretty nice.
It sounded nice. Yeah. It was two stories. Yeah. There was a balcony. Mm-hmm.
Personally, I've never been skiing, so I can't speak on how fun that is. I've heard it's really fun, but I would much rather stay in the cabin from the book, especially in the snow. Yeah. I think that'd be awesome.
It sounds so nice. Perfect trip. Yeah, I agree.
A little white trip.
A little. A night in the pines.
In the pines.
Didn't I technically spend two nights in the pines?
Yes.
Yeah, the first night they're partying. Like the second night they're getting hunted down and murdered.
A night's in the pines.
Two nights in the pines.
A semi-long trip. A night's in the pines. A knot
That's
in the pines.
That's the sequel.
A fortnight in the pines.
Jesus Christ. Which do you prefer, the ritual twist from the film or the fake horror movie twist of the book?
I prefer the fake horror movie twist.
Really?
Like in concept, in theory, I prefer that twist. In execution,
Yeah.
I say no more.
Got it.
I don't know. I really like that there was so much lore in the movie.
That's true.
I like the concept, of this secret organization every year trying to keep the world from ending.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really cool concept.
Yeah.
In execution, I mean, it was kind of goofy.
Really?
But I thought it was cool.
I like the ritual a lot.
Yeah, I like both.
Yeah, I think there's like all these little details to spot in the movie, especially like the monsters and like the board of like when they're gambling on like what monsters they're gonna pick, and just like they put a lot of detail into that stuff, and I really appreciate it.
To be fair though, you could make the argument that like we only notice that stuff because we're watching it.
Yeah.
Like if the book was to be made into a film, who knows how much detail they'd put into stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure like if you read the screenplay for the movie, it probably doesn't mention all the different options.
I mean, I guess it was a production designer's job to do all that. I don't know. I just think it's always fun to like rewatch and kind of spot different things. Yeah. Zombie redneck family versus merman. Who would you rather face off against?
Merman, because just stay out of the water. That's all you gotta do.
Well, lab guy wasn't in the water.
He also got launched across the room and slammed against the control board.
True.
I think the explosion did him in more than the merman.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
So I would say merman.
Merman. I think I'm in agreement. The zombie family is scary.
Yeah,
those are my this versus that. Thank you guys for joining me on this episode. It's a very short one.
Actually, I did have something else I wanted to mention.
Oh, yeah, please.
As I was reading this, I was thinking about these like teenagers and like the destruction they're causing, you know? I was thinking like if this was like an Airbnb,
oh my God,
they're screwed.
Yeah.
So I did some calculations, all right?
What?
On how much they would have to pay if they were replacing everything they damaged in the Airbnb.
Like the during their party?
During their whole time there.
Oh, well,
is this like
for the book?
Like when they're getting killed off, you're like, you guys are causing too much damage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So you took account everything that they damaged?
Yes. It's looking to set them back a good $1,400.
Okay. Let's go down the list.
Yeah. Do you have a spreadsheet?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
They broke the attic rope. $599. This 36x72 Lindsay window. $270. The dovetail drawer that he ripped out while looking for knives.
I forgot.
$129.95.
You don't know if he broke it.
No, he ripped it out and then threw it on the ground.
Oh,
why
would
he throw it?
He did do that.
I guess he's panicking.
The front to the drawer, $6. The kitchen chair that he slams, $68.50. The phone lines.
You don't know how expensive that chair is.
It's true. I just did like general rustic cabin. Stuff like that. The heavy ceramic vase, $30.99. The glass coffee table that the dude stomped through, $76.64. The dining table, which I was looking at pictures. I was envisioning like one of those big log ones.
Yeah.
$825.
Ooh, yeah.
However, if we take into account the uninsured car.
Oh, yeah. They totally wrecked that car. The total goes
from $14,013 to $55,398.
Oh, my God.
Based on a 2005 Navigator.
MSRP. It said what type of car it was.
Said it was a Navigator. Yeah. Oh, didn't say what year. I assumed it was probably the year before the book came out.
Yeah.
As when he was looking. Mm. It was decked out, though, with cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And he described it as looking like a car from a rap video.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Oh, yeah, they did.
When did they first get in the accident? What was...
They busted up the family's car.
Yeah, they when they're trying to drive off.
Yeah, they ripped off their own bumper. And Ian says that there's not really any damage to the family car.
The hat looks and it's like really messed up, right?
How did that happen? So
Ian's like, you're good, you're good.
The car
and he's like,
is parked. Yeah. And then he kind of.
They pull up, I think, so the car's parked, the family car. They pull up behind the family car. And in their hurry, he makes a turn too wide, and because Ian tells him he's good, and he scratches the back of their car, which rips off their bumper.
So it's Ian's fault.
Yeah, it was Ian's fault. Yeah.
Well, Sam's like, the one that signed. So.
Oh yeah, it's all Matt's fault actually.
Pretty penny, these teens are in for.
Thank you for
it wasn't
for doing all that.
Of course, you know.
Yeah.
Who would?
Very much. I think it's safe to say you are the only person to calculate all this in the entire world, actually.
That just shows my dedication
and
to
I
this
appreciate
story
that.
And narrating this story.
Your number one
is my goal. Is
number
my
one
dream.
Fan of A Little White Trip, A Night in the Pines. I just need
laughing?
To emphasize
Why are you
that
laughing?
Title.
I'm stating my dreams and you're laughing.
I'm sorry. You're allowed to have dreams and that's okay. Number one fan of the book, number one fan of this pod. And I appreciate it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate you guys joining me
on
this episode. This was a very interesting and different concept than we've ever done. So I appreciate that.
Like I said, follow me on Letterboxd.
Yes. Yeah, shout out.
That's DEJOWVU. It's like deja vu, but my last name's Zhao, so it's like deja vu.
Yeah. Do you have your Letterboxd that you want to shout out?
It's Smile Clouder. Smile and Clouder. It's a long story. The username, it's a long story to get into.
Let's unravel that now. Yeah.
So thank you guys for joining me. Next episode, Sam is coming back. We're going to be covering The Long Walk. So make sure to check it out in theaters. Read the book. Another Stephen King novel. Let's go. And yeah, follow us on at Dreadful Digest Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. And yeah, we'll see you next time. Okay. Bye.
Bye.